it's indiscriminate. It catches everything in its path, and it can seriously harm fish stocks.
The Coast Guard stops a vessel suspected of illegal drift net fishing. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, September 30th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, building excitement over rare earth mineral production in Alaska.
We'll invite General Electric and everybody else like that to make electric motors and generators in Alaska, because that's the only way they're going to get their hands on the raw material.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender, ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
A jury in the western Alaska city of Bethel is hearing a high-profile murder case today. Two men stand accused of torturing and killing 19-year-old Benjamin Kaiser of Hooper Bay last October. One is 47-year-old Jeffrey Hout of Bethel. The other is 33-year-old Harry Williams of Bethel. Reporter Shane Iverson has been following the case, and he joins us from member station KYUK in Bethel. A word of caution, some listeners may find the violent details of this crime disturbing to hear. Shane, there have been several murders and killings in Bethel over the last few years and decades. What is it about this case that is generating so much interest in your community?
Laura, I think it's several factors. One is definitely that the accused, the one from Bethel, Jeff Hout, is very well known. He was born and raised here his whole life. Also, I think more than anything, probably is just the heinous nature of the crime that was in full detail before the jury at the trial. This young man, Benjamin Kaiser, was beaten severely with what would appear to be several instruments over several hours.
In addition to Jeffrey Hout and Harry Williams, there was another man that was implicated as at least a witness to what happened. What's going on with David Kenny?
David Kenny was a law clerk. He moved here to Bethel just shortly before this all took place. He was brought up on charges of impeding the investigation because he is believed to have known about the torture and have seen Kaiser's body, perhaps before he was dead. And he was going to be tried with the other two men. And the only reason he wasn't, his case was severed just a week or week and a half before the trial started. He had a private attorney. That attorney requested to come off the case probably because of payment issues, so that David Kenny's new attorney would not have time to, you know, get caught up to speed on it. So it could have a detrimental effect on his case. So that was the only reason it was severed. So he'll be tried later in January for impeding the investigation.
The trial got off to a fast start. What has the jury heard so far?
Well, they did hear from several of the accused, Jeff Hout's close friends, who did say that he essentially confessed to murdering the young man. They also heard from the chief medical examiner from the state, who said that the cause of death was blunt force trauma to the head. It's basically their bruises and blood injuries, almost every square inch of his body, but it was bleeding in the brain that ultimately killed him, which she said could only have been caused by blunt force trauma.
And Shane, how has the defense pushed back? How are they challenging some of the testimony?
When they cross-examined the star witness, Nick Cook, you know, Nick had freely admitted during his testimony that he helped the other two move the body from the cold shop up to the warm house. So they questioned his bias that he could possibly have a reason to testify against them. But he said that he had no promises with the prosecutors and no promises with the police. Actually, before they even had a chance to question why it took 32 hours for him to report, he said simply he was afraid. He didn't trust that the police would catch him. So it took 32 hours of deliberating and thinking about it before he decided to come forward.
KYUK, Shane Iverson reporting from Bethel. The court has adjourned for the weekend. The trial will resume on Monday. A stateless fishing vessel suspected of illegally drift netting in high seas is being escorted into Dutch harbor this weekend. The Coast Guard intercepted the Bangoon Perkasa in mid-September. The crew initially tried to cut their nets and flee when spotted by a patrolling Coast Guard helicopter, and once boarded, they falsely claimed the vessel was registered in Indonesia. The boarding team discovered 10 miles of drift net, 30 tons of squid, and 30 shark carcasses on board the Perkasa. High seas drift netting is banned by the United Nations. Coast Guard Petty Officer Sarah Francis says it's harmful for ocean ecosystems.
It's indiscriminate. It catches everything in its path, and it can seriously harm fish stocks. So the United States Coast Guard actively participates in international cooperative efforts against high seas drift net fishing, which is encouraged by the United Nations moratorium.
Usually, illegal fishing vessels are sent back to their home countries, but stateless vessels have to be seized and escorted to a U.S. port. In the Perkasa's case, this poses a problem because in addition to its illegal catch, the boat is carrying rats. Because of the danger rats pose to the Aleutian ecosystem, the Coast Guard is holding the boat outside state waters until all the rodents are exterminated. Once in port, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Office of Law Enforcement will assess the boat's catch to determine criminal and civil liability. Vessels fishing illegally face criminal penalties of up to $100,000 and civil penalties of up to $25,000. All 22 crew members will remain on board the Perkasa until Customs and Border Protection can determine their countries of origin. They speak 5 different languages, but it is unclear whether they have any official documentation. The crew will also be questioned about whether they were working with other vessels and who is financing and profiting from the illegal fishing. It has been at least 5 years since the Coast Guard intercepted a pirate vessel of this kind. A meeting on rare earth minerals drew a big crowd in Fairbanks today. The state-sponsored Strategic and Critical Mineral Summit brought together government, industry, and research officials to discuss Alaska's rare earth potential. The minerals are in high demand by technology industries for making everything from batteries to sensors and other electronic components. China currently controls the market, but Alaska is one of the other places with rare earths. And Governor Sean Parnell told the 250 conference attendees the state wants to compete.
Alaska has accepted the challenge where China said we're going to curtail exports and we're going to try to control that market even more and save them for ourselves. Alaska is accepting the challenge of saying we've got them here. We want to provide them to our nation and to the world beyond as well.
The state is spending millions of dollars to survey and catalog rare earth mineralization sites in Alaska. There are 70 known already, including Mount Prindle, north of Fairbanks, and Bokan Mountain near Ketchikan. The Bokan prospect, which is being investigated by a private company, contains dysprosium, a metal used in the making of electronic parts in high demand by the auto industry. Jack Lifton of Illinois-based Technology Metals Research and an authority on rare earth minerals urged Alaska to compete with China, which is holding back its dysprosium. Lifton laid out a plan by which Alaska could develop an in-state rare earth industry with the resource at Bokan Mountain.
We'll start producing alloys by joint venturing with the Great Western Minerals Company, which is already producing these alloys in the UK and has a plant in Detroit that's idle for lack of feedstock. And then we'll invite General Electric and everybody else like that to make electric motors and generators in Alaska, because that's the only way they're going to get their hands on the raw material. Okay? And suddenly, Americans are making all this stuff, and you don't have to worry about, and the Chinese can do what they want. Who cares?
Lifton stressed the importance of developing a complete industry from mining to processing and manufacturing of electronic components. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, fiddle music lifts the spirits of young and old.
I feel like I'm wild and free with the music. It sounds pretty and I'm really good at God is so good and shaven haircut.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Quitting tobacco is the best thing you can do for your health. Join a free program that will help you create an easy-to-follow plan to quit. It will show you how to get ready, take action, and then live the rest of your life as a non-smoker. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line provides 8 weeks of patches, gum, or lozenges, and quit coaches that are trained to address Alaskans, including expectant mothers. There's more information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line. It's free, it's confidential, and it works.
Wasilla City elections are set for October 4th. Four candidates are vying for the mayor's seat in the bustling city in the Matanuska Valley. Incumbent Vern Ruprecht is running for a second term. He's being challenged by Tafina Katkus, Michael Carson, and Diane Woodruff. Wasilla City voters also must fill two city council seats. In Palmer, city voters will decide on a $2 million water utility bond and select two city council members from three candidates. Alaska's congressional delegation has asked the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to drop a fine against Eielson Air Force Base. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, the delegation is requesting more time for base officials to address issues at Eielson's aging coal-fired power plant.
Alaska's two senators and congressmen asked EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson last week to forego a fine of more than $218,000 against Eielson Air Force Base for violations of a federal environmental law known as the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, or RCRA. RCRA gives EPA the authority to control hazardous wastes. The EPA fined Eielson for violations of the RCRA law reportedly related to the base's 60-year-old coal-fired power plant. The 25-megawatt plant burns nearly 200,000 tons of coal every year to provide electricity and steam for the base. Julie Haskett, Senator Mark Begich's press secretary, says the letter was sent a week ago to urge Jackson to back off and give base officials a chance to work out a deal and apply that $218,000 toward a solution.
The intent of the letter of Senator Begich and the entire delegation is basically to say to the EPA, look, we know that Eielson has some challenges with their 60-plus-year-old power plant, but rather than get a punitive penalty of work with them, give them a chance to correct it and use their already limited resources in that fashion versus having to pay a fine.
Haskett didn't know exactly what led the agency to impose the fine, and neither did a staff member with another of the lawmakers who signed on to the letter. The only ones who know the details of the case are officials with the EPA and Eielson, and they're not saying anything about it. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Nana Regional Corporation announced yesterday a per-share dividend of $14.70. Last year's dividend was slightly more than $12 per share. NRC has 12,700 shareholders and is based in Northwest Alaska. They will distribute the dividend in mid-November. The U.S. Justice Department has awarded the Tlingit and Haida Central Council nearly $900,000 to expand tribal court services. Currently, the court hears paternity and child support cases involving tribal members. Attorney Jesse Archibald with Tlingit and Haida's Child Support Unit says the grant will eventually allow the court to hear domestic violence cases.
The goal is to give them a culturally appropriate forum to seek a restraining order and to have our tribal court enter that order and to have the state of Alaska work with us in partnership to enter the order into the state system and assist in providing enforcement to keep families safe.
The Central Council was one of 20 Alaska Native organizations to receive a grant under the Justice Department's Coordinated Tribal Assistance Program this year. Archibald says the Council's Judiciary Committee will use the money to develop codes governing family violence cases and work on a cooperative justice agreement with the state of Alaska. Funds will also be used to update court computers and develop a video conferencing system. Eddie Brakes, manager of Tlingit and Haida's Tribal Child Support Unit, says the goal is to offer a more holistic approach to tribal member victims of domestic violence.
The ultimate goal is to provide an alternate venue to the state court system in tribal communities. Less adversarial, more family-based, and crafted with unique values of the tribal citizenry in mind.
The Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska is the sovereign tribal government for more than 27,000 Tlingit and Haida Indians worldwide. Its judicial branch includes three elected judges and a magistrate. Earlier this year, the Alaska Supreme Court recognized tribal court authority in child welfare cases in its decision in the case State of Alaska versus Native Village of Tanana. Haida Energy is starting to build Prince of Wales Island's next hydro power plant, but it still needs more funding. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The Reynolds Creek Hydro Project has long been a dream of the Haida Village Native Corporation, based in Haidaberg. Project manager Corey Hildenbrand says that dream is close to becoming reality.
We are on the ground. Actually, direct construction is moving in with their barge. We awarded early in September. We've got about 9 or 11 weeks of work, and hopefully the weather will cooperate and we get this first phase of work done.
Reynolds Creek is about 10 miles from Haidaberg, which is about 25 miles southeast of Craig. It's being developed by Haida Energy, a joint venture of the Haida Corporation and APT, the Alaska Power and Telephone Company. Its powerhouse and small dam will feed electricity into Prince of Wales Island's grid, eliminating the use of high-cost diesel generators. Hildenbrand, speaking at the Rural Alaska Energy Conference in Juneau, says there's a long list of projects for this fall.
Repairing the roads, building the road into the powerhouse site, building the road into the dam site so we can do our geotech investigations, confirm what we have for foundation conditions. We have AP&T has also started construction of the transmission line from Haidaberg out towards Deer Bay. The turbine generator is very close to being on order. And then we'll be moving into final design based on our geotech work this fall.
The project's power is expected to cost 11 or 12 cents a kilowatt hour. Its overall cost is estimated at $28 million, paid for by a mix of grants, loans, and backing from its developers. Alvin Edenshaw of the Haida Corporation says that's more than they have.
Along the way, since the 2000 and 2006, the cost has gone up, so we've gone back to the state, and we are in the process right now with the Alaska Energy Authority in ADA to develop another $9 million loan to bring our project online.
Developers hope to have the hydro project complete and producing electricity in 2014. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Solstice Advertising, bringing creativity to Alaska businesses and nonprofits. From research and strategy to print, web, and broadcast production, Solstice Advertising, an agency for brands that want to shine. And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline with over 700 employees.
Support for AK comes from the Federal Aviation Administration, setting standards for the operation of aircraft in airports. FAA.gov/go/flyalaska or toll free at 1-866-357-4704.
Ketchikan, Kotzebue,
Dillingham, Sitka, Chugiak, Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon, Wrangell,
Barrow, Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Angela Denning Barnes. This week on AK, music education. A little-known but long-running program is teaching music in villages across Alaska. Earlier this year, teachers with Dancing with the Spirit, We're an Eagle. The program aims to prevent suicide and substance abuse in villages, but it's also bringing communities together. Emily Schwing has the story.
Belle Mickelson loves to play music. She takes her fiddle wherever she goes, but she'll sing and dance as well. So 16 years ago, while she was on a work trip in Galena, she bonded with some of the locals who also liked the fiddle.
I went over to some people's house, some of the elders, and we played music, and then I was sitting around having tea, and I kind of said, well, what's going on? And they just told me how depressed they were because of all the suicide that was happening. And I thought, oh my gosh, what could I do? And I didn't think about it till later I realized what an impact music makes on kids.
When Mickelson returned to her home in Cordova, she started a music camp there.
After 5 years, we said every town should have one. It's so amazing.
Mickelson is tall and slender with short silver hair, large round eyes, and she's always smiling. She's an Episcopal priest, and she's been traveling the state with her fiddle for the past decade. I caught up with her in Eagle when the Yukon Quest International Sled Dog Race blew through town last February. She was helping students from kindergarten through 12th grade get ready for a community concert.
What's your name?
Tiffany. Well, I think music's important because you get to do stuff and learn how to play instruments.
Tell me what your name is.
Violet. I feel like I'm wild and free with the music. It sounds pretty, and I'm really good at God is so good and shaven haircut.
The Eagle Community School invited Mickelson to Eagle for about a week. She's taken her music program, Dancing with the Spirit, on the road. The program is affiliated with the Episcopal Church in Alaska, but the songs are mostly secular. And Mickelson doesn't travel alone. She gets help from other Alaskan musicians like Fred Weiss.
It's really a joyful thing. I mean, I do other things. I'm a carpenter by trade, but I prefer to do this by a mile.
Many of the songs students practice are the kind of thing you'd expect, but both Weiss and Mickelson help to give the music some Alaskan flavor. And in Eagle, they managed to work the Yukon Quest in as well. Music isn't new to kids in Eagle, but learning about music in school is pretty unique. For the first time this year, kids in kindergarten through fifth grade will have a music class via video conference with a music teacher from Tok. It used to be that music was only taught sporadically. Weiss and Mickelson say Dancing with the Spirit isn't only about bringing music into schools. It's about getting the community involved as well.
We work from the second school starts till it ends, and then the evenings we come back and do things.
With special groups, I mean, we do one-on-one or anyone who wants to learn. A lot of folks show up. In fact, I had a couple fathers come in, and one of the fathers was over here and then to the very end, and he wanted to learn the blues.
And Weiss says he's always impressed by his students.
Some of them. I mean, there's a young mandolin player, Wesley. He's really supple with his wrist. He's only, I don't know, was he 9, 10 years old?
What's your name? Wesley. I was playing mandolin because I like that instrument. It's a really nice. I like the music. It's fun, you know.
Mickelson admits funding is an issue. Some of the grant money they used to operate under has run out. Other funds come from schools they visit, and it's no secret school budgets are tight. But it doesn't seem to get her down.
Well, it'll come. You know, it is. I've been so busy just doing the program, I really haven't gotten out and done the grants. But I hope we'll be recognized in Alaska, and I just feel like it's just going to spread like wildfire.
The Eagle Community School is in the midst of applying for another teacher incentive grant to bring Belle Mickelson back during the Yukon Quest again in 2012. For AK, I'm Emily Schwing.
Now it's time for our weekly trip around the state. First, we'll drop in on Whittier, the tunnel-accessed community on the west side of Prince William Sound. Then it's north to the interior village of Koyukuk on the Yukon River.
I'm Diana Barnes. I'm the executive assistant for the city of Whittier. Whittier was originally, it was here for a strategic purpose because during the war with Japan, they had founded Whittier, and it was a place that was pretty well hidden. They couldn't hardly find the town with all the overcast and stuff to put oil tankers and to get cargo back and forth to Anchorage. Years ago, it was one of the few ice-free ports in the state of Alaska. Now, of course, there's a lot more, but it's an ice-free port, so we get freight in here year-round. In the wintertime, we get really, really hurricane-strength winds. Sometimes they'll last 2 to 3 weeks. It keeps people out. We get, on the average, 380 inches of snowfall a year. So we do get a lot of snow, but with the warm weather, it snows and then we get rain and it melts and then we get the wind and it turns to ice, and so we have a huge ice skating rink out here. It's mostly recreational. We do have a lot of commercial, but we try to reserve most of the little small boat harbor. There's a lot of personal use. It's just a long waiting list, but it is all along the sound. This year, Princess came in, I'm not sure how many times, but they came in every Saturday and then every other Wednesday. Now next year, I think All in America's coming back, which means we'll get double the ships. Actually, they have it until the last cruise ship, and after that, our sidewalks will roll up. They send out fireworks, and yeah, it's a big to-do for the last cruise ship. We work really hard. We're exhausted by the end of summer.
My name is Catherine Folger. I'm the city clerk in Koyukuk, Alaska. We're on the right where the Yukon and the Koyukuk River meets. And we don't have running water. We just have honey buckets and the washateria, which is where we do laundry and take showers. They hunt for moose and bear. Some people will kill wolves, or they go fishing all summer long. That's pretty much it. Some people set traps for, like, rabbits and stuff. Well, the kids have activities all throughout the week. And then there's baseball in the summer. And there's open gym in the winter. There's the library. They do arts and crafts and stuff over there. And they have movie night, which they show in the school and the gym. And it's just a huge screen on the wall. To watch movies every Friday. We're just waiting for the first snowfall. I'm gonna say it's gonna happen in October around the end of the month, but it might be earlier because it's already freezing.
That was Diana Barnes in Whittier and Catherine Folger in Koyukuk. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK on Alaska News Nightly. We had help this week from Emily Schwing and Ellen Lockyer. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Shane Iverson in Bethel, Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska, Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Len Anderson and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, and Casey Kelly and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. Our guest host for AK this week was Angela Denning Barnes. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
The law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by
North Rim Bank, taking your business to the next level. With help from North Rim Bank, spot the turns and opportunities that lie ahead for Alaska. More at northrim.com. Member FDIC.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.